the network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
You're listening to AV Social, Episode 7, Community Is As Community Does, recorded July 26, 2012. Welcome to another episode of AV Social. As with me always is Mr. George Tucker. How you doing, George?
Good evening, everybody. How are we?
Very well, very well. So today, George, we're going to be talking about communities and not the very underrated show on NBC, but actual people, living, breathing, talking people. So today I'd really like to kind of go over some tips and some practices on how, you know, our listeners can really start to build an audience and really take part in that. I know that's something you've got a lot of experience with.
Yeah, I mean, and this is one of the things we were talking about. Even recently, we discussed something about community with another hashtag popping up, which we might even just cover in another show. But what for me, community? What is community? Something about the tenets of a book called The Clue Train Manifesto. Write it down, everybody. It's a really important book. It was written 15 years ago, and they called all of the things we're doing right now. And one of the things that they called was building a community. Dropping the firewalls, stopping with the corporate speak, and actually being one with your customers. And that's what we want to talk about today is, well, how do you do that? And, you know, oh my gosh, I have to do this. I have to talk to someone? Well, yeah, you do.
Person.
Exactly.
Right. So, well, to help us do that today, we're going to enlist the help of our always awesome panelists, starting with Miss Dawn Mead, also known as AV Dawn of NetAV. How you doing, Dawn?
Hey, very good. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Very, very welcome. We also have Matt Scott, president of Mega Audio Video. Hello, Matt.
Hi. How you guys doing?
Very well. And we have NC Nwako, marketing manager at Rave. Hello, NC.
Hey, everyone.
And then our special guest for today's episode is Sarah Fleischman of Access Networks. How you doing, Sarah?
I'm good. Thank you guys for having me.
Sarah, can you give us just a little 1-2 minute kind of who Access Networks is and how you fit into this crazy industry of ours?
Absolutely. We provide pre-programmed networking solutions to integrators around the globe. So you call us for your networking needs. We work with you to pre-program it and kind of get it all ready for the integrator. So when they arrive at their project, they just plug it in, they call us, we support it, and we get you guys going. So definitely networking is on the brain for everyone this coming CEDIA. So
at least better be anyway.
Yes.
So, well, great. Well, great. Well, Sarah, you know, I kind of want to start with you a little bit here. You know, given what you guys do, I imagine community building is, I'm not going to say the word a challenge. Well, actually, I will use challenge because I think it's a challenge for everybody, quite frankly, because a lot of what you do is sold, not bought, if that makes sense. You probably have to look for people who are looking to have a conversation about the issues that your problems can solve. Can you talk a little bit about where you guys go to look and what exactly your community looks like?
Absolutely. It's definitely a challenge. You can use that word freely. You know, really the integrators, the CEDIAs, kind of the CEDIA network is our network of integrators that we want to talk to. You know, those are the people who are really going to be deploying our networks of the people who we're going to be working with. But it's a challenge because when I came in, I wanted to talk to end users. And then I realized, well, you know, typically the end user doesn't really understand what's going to be in their racks and what the network does. And so while there is a little bit of outreach to an end user, it's really to the integrators and also I would say to a community of architects and builders, which is really something that we're moving toward right now, is trying to get people on the design side understanding what we do so that they can design for the network. And so I would say it's a combination of both of those.
So you actually have a wide net you're kind of casting there between integrators, and you said you guys are doing some outreach on architects. I mean, you know, I think most people within the CEDIA channel kind of know the message boards that they would go to, or they know Twitter accounts to follow, or even Facebook accounts, LinkedIn groups, things like that. Let's say a company like yours starts a new initiative. Okay, we're going to go after architects now. I mean, what would be kind of an initial step? Like, where would you go to look for some of those people?
You know what? That's actually what we are in the process of trying to figure out right now. It's a new thing for us to try to go after this market, and it's been kind of brought to my attention recently that this would be a good idea. So definitely LinkedIn can be a great resource for that. If you find, we have a couple partners on the architect and builder side, so we talk to them and kind of find out, you know, what are the communities that they would be looking at? Who are their peers? Who would they be talking to? And so it's really best, I think, to talk to the people that you already have the connections with and find out where their connections are and then leverage those. That's really the only way to, not the only way, but I think one of the best ways to break into a new market, because I certainly wouldn't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent point, I think, is I think with a lot of this, people fail to just ask questions. Like, go to an architect and ask them, hey, what magazines do you read? What online message boards do you participate in? Dawn, you really kind of are Sarah's, you know, being on the integration side, you and Matt both, you would be her initial audience kind of on the CEDIA side or the Infocom side. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, where do you guys utilize those resources such as LinkedIn groups, and what are you going there to look for? So I'll start with you, Dawn.
Well, I absolutely take advantage of as many features on LinkedIn as possible, including the LinkedIn groups. And another feature on LinkedIn that's very often underutilized for building community and building engagement with both customers and potential customers is the LinkedIn questions section for establishing yourself and your company as an expert on various topics. And I've used those since the days of my previous integration company. Both of those tools, the groups and the questions, have been vital when I was unemployed between integrators for staying involved in the industry and getting, networking out there for getting a new position. And then since in my new position, they've been fantastic for building community and building name recognition for my new company since they have that problem. I mean, right now, this is a great topic for me because right now I'm building community for this company that has no name recognition and never had any social presence. And so in the past 2 months, I've built a Facebook page, a LinkedIn page, et cetera, and I'm right now trying to build community. So this is going to be a great topic for me because the things that I'm already doing, I'm going to augment with what you guys tell me and hopefully be a great success.
Absolutely. And Matt, I mean, you as an integrator, do you use those resources? Do you look for, you know, a manufacturer or service provider like Access Networks or somebody? Do you go to those to maybe pose a question or something like that in hopes that they're going to find you?
Yeah, I do sometimes. It completely depends what you're doing or what you're looking for. But a lot of times I found that with social, I can get a answer faster or, you know, just scan through somebody else's question that they've already asked on, you know, LinkedIn or any of the other sites, and just be able to find it from there rather than picking up the phone and trying to call tech support or, you know, go that route. And the other thing is, by having the, you know, kind of the AV community that we've kind of built, especially via Twitter, I've got some, you know, people that I've gotten to know really well who are both professional friends, but some who are even becoming personal friends. And I found it's been very effective to be able to reach out to them and, you know, just ask that quick question or look for advice and get it really, really quickly. Always, nine times out of 10, much faster than, you know, your traditional methods.
Oh, absolutely. And Dawn, kind of going back, I'd like to kind of go back to you a little bit here, because you said you are starting those communities. What resources would you kind of offer or tips on, you know, as you've been involved in this for a company like yours? Let's say there's a company that's in the exact same boat as you. They're like, okay, you know, my 80-year-old grandmother knows how to set up a Facebook page, but how do I get people to it? Where do I go to educate people of our presence? I mean, what was kind of step one in that process?
To be completely honest, step one is get everybody in your company to like your page or friend your page, and have all of their friends like or friend your page. With Facebook especially, they have all kinds of inane rules regarding minimum number of followers before you even get access to their statistics and before you get access to all of the features of the company page building process. So we had to sort of pad things internally to get those minimum numbers going. We're a small business, so we don't have 30 plus employees. Once you do that, though, that's when you start just putting out good content. You have to have something to say aside from, look, buy from us. Aren't we great? You know,
right.
And that's why, some of the first things I do on Twitter, on Facebook, on any of the networks is find the groups that pertain to not just my industry, but also my community. For instance, my business is located in Carroll County, Maryland. So in addition to becoming active with and liking on Facebook the Greater Baltimore Tech Council, I also made the company involved with the Carroll County Tech Council. And through that community building online and socially is community building in real life. So you have to leave your office and your little cubicle and go out to a meeting of the Tech Council and introduce yourself, and then let them know, look, we have a Facebook page, we have a LinkedIn page, we're involved in these things. And so through word of mouth that way, that starts building recognition. And then of course you let all your existing customers know and potential customers know, look, we have these resources available online, and start building community that way. And after a while it starts to snowball. People see you as a resource of good information and of good content, and they start to come to you of their own accord and recommend you to others. And that's when you start going viral and getting more followers. Now we're in the very early stages of that, but we're starting to get a little bit of traction that way.
And NC, I mean, you guys at Rave, I mean, it seems like you're involved in just about every social media platform there is. You know, if a new one pops up next week, I guarantee you Rave will have some kind of presence there. So you guys are no strangers to building that initial kind of audience in each platform. I mean, do you have a specific approach that you guys take to that?
Well, it's tough. We jump right in and we try to see how people are using the various networks. And based on that, we can sort of figure out how we can communicate with the people that are there. For instance, Google Plus is something that we're working on but haven't really gotten the hang of. Part of it is a Google thing, and part of it is
that nobody else uses Google Plus.
Well, I wouldn't say nobody else uses Google Plus, but there's not a great mechanism for B2B companies to really reach out to individuals. I think Google Plus is great for individuals and less for a group. But Rave, being a publication company, is in an interesting position in that a lot of the times our content creates a way for communities to relate with each other. So sometimes we find ourselves doing more listening and more looking around at what other people are doing than actually actively going out and saying, hey, we're on Facebook or we're on Twitter here. Even things, one tactic that I've used and that I actually like a lot is finding out where the people in our community that we already know about, what are they interested in, and sort of liking, for instance, on Facebook, pages that they like, and looking at information that they find interesting and information that, brings about good conversation among their communities. And if we can sort of look and see how that's going, then we can really tailor the type of content or the way that we announce that we have content or the way that we interact with people based on how they already like to get information. So ours is a lot of listening. And we don't always get it right the first time, but we figure out how. So some platforms have been slower than others, but the important thing for us is listening.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's an excellent point, because I think what people really fail at social media lots of times, especially right out of the gate, is just coming out of it, just blasting marketing message or your company's message any and every chance you get. We really like to tell people, you know, you have to treat it almost like you would, to Don's point, like if you got out networking, you wouldn't just walk up to somebody and start saying, this is what my company does, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you really want to start a conversation. And Sarah, I think you guys do a really good job at that at Access Networks, you know, whether it be through Twitter or your blog post or taking part in conversations on Facebook. I mean, do you guys really proactively say, hey, let's really offer, you know, resources, let's have a conversation as opposed to here's everything Access Networks does?
Well, first of all, thank you. And yes, we really do try to not just push marketing messages, not just push branding, really kind of try to be, A, try to provide knowledge to other people in the industry because what we do is so complicated, and also really try to interact. It's like everyone's been saying, it's, you would not walk into a space and say, hey, we're Access Networks 20% off sale. I mean, nobody talks like that. And right. So on Twitter, on Facebook, on the blog, you know, we want to share personality and we want people to be able to meet us and know a little bit about us. You know, I've really encouraged everybody here at the team to have, not everybody, but those who will do it, to have a Twitter presence and to not talk about the company, but really to talk about them and what they're doing and what they like and what's interesting to them and what might be interesting to other people in the industry. And I have noticed connections being built because of that, people coming up to us at industry trade shows and commenting on things that we've said online. So I've found that to be really great. And it yeah. shows that actually works. You know, people listen when you have something interesting and new to say.
And Matt, as an integrator, do you maybe hold a company like Sarah's that's a manufacturer or service provider, one that has more of a dialogue, do you look at that in a more favorable light than, say, like a company that's just out there, here's our latest press release?
Dramatically. As, you know, as an integrator, it's nothing but frustrating when, you know, my Twitter feed or my Facebook feed ends up looking just as bad as my email inbox with, you know, just as you said, press releases and just absolutely ridiculous questions or statements being put out. I really have one major company that I absolutely swear and love their products, but they are, and they're huge. They're a huge pro AV speaker and other multiple other product companies.
I'm going to stop you there before you actually say that.
I'm not going to say who it is because I love their products, but good Lord God, they are just absolutely terrible at social media. Uh-huh. And it's, you know, it just, you tune out completely because every time it's, have you seen, you know, this latest line array? Boom. And that's it. And there's no anything, or worse, they start spamming other integrators in the industry with that same, hey, are you using a line array today? Boom.
Oh, wow.
And it's just, it's garbage.
And is that mainly, I mean, obviously because it is just spam and it's totally a one-sided communication. Is it because it just shows that they're absolutely not listening to anything that anybody's saying?
Yeah, it's because they're not listening. It's because they're obviously not understanding, especially with Twitter, how it works and what you're supposed to do and how, you know, kind of the number one keys to not alienate yourself from the rest of your followers or your potential followers. And it just, it takes that whole, hey, we really don't understand what we're doing, but we're going to just do it the way we do everything else. Cause you know, it must be the same. So it's just that, it's that lackadaisical approach
right.
of just not even trying to understand, you know, how to use the medium.
NC, from the press side, I mean, do you notice things like that? And does it maybe paint companies in a certain light with you if you see that same kind of tactic?
Yes, actually we do. We're constantly looking for people who are sharing meaningful information or meaningful blogs or meaningful, you know, topics about their products or about their company or about the industry that, you know, really helps everyone and not just that single company. So while we see it, we're kind of used to filtering it out. And from our side, we also want to make sure that we're not constantly just pushing out a news story for the sake of a news story. We want to make sure that that news story is something that could potentially be a mechanism for conversation that gets started with somebody else. So We kind of see it from both ends, but we've gotten pretty good at knowing when to say, okay, maybe I won't click on that link that you've got. It just seems a little bit too spammy. But that just says something about how you actually talk to people and making sure that the way that you hold out a conversation on Twitter is similar to what you would do in person. Because ultimately, now, you're connecting with real people.
Well, you kind of hit on an interesting point. As a PR person, this strikes me all the time. And I obviously understand that you guys as a press outlet are unbiased, but do you think sometimes if you're writing a story about a company that you perhaps know is going to help spread the story through social media channels, I mean, does that play any factor into it?
Well, as a rule, we always at mention, if possible, the company that we are talking about, because I think that companies should know when they're being talked about so that if they have something to contribute to the conversation, they can do that. And oftentimes we get people who follow those companies or even the companies themselves pushing forward that message and actually starting conversations. And sometimes they, you know, challenge us on stuff we've written, and sometimes they move it forward, or sometimes they say, we never thought about it that way. So we don't really see it as, you know, hoping that they'll retweet us more so than hoping that they will start something with other people within the industry, because ultimately that's what the news is there for people to be able to get the information they need and use it and whatever functions their businesses do.
Absolutely. Just want to remind everybody listening to AV Social. Today we're talking about community building. With me is George Tucker, as well as Dawn Mead, Matt Scott, NC Nwako, and our special guest, Sarah Fleischman from Access Network. So one thing, and I can kind of just open this up to everyone, I think one of the forgotten elements of social media nowadays is message boards. And I know, George, you can speak to this because I feel like you're a rock star when it comes to message boards. But, I mean, can any of you really talk about how much you do or don't utilize those resources?
Well, I mean, it comes back to the nature of the question, what is community, right? We've been talking a lot about content, a lot about outreach, and a lot about not repeating or spamming. But I want to take us a step back for a minute with that question is, what is community? I mean, we talked about maybe it's a certain subset of clients, but it might just be somebody who needs to know the information. So by community, I'm thinking somebody who would be interested in what I'm doing, but may not be my direct target. And communities are built of what? Not just people I need to talk to who will buy my product or push my product, but the people who are really interested in what we're doing or something around it. And that the information I can provide them, say short of a sales sheet or a price guide, they will be as interested and active in that community and helping foster it and build it and push it forward. So in that end, we've got the big three, right? We've got the Facebook, the Twitter, and the LinkedIn, to be very George Bushy about it. and then you've got subsets all around and Path and you know, any number of subset social media stuff. But when you get down to what community is, it really is that definition. So when we do the DIY show, we first talked with the community that we thought was right, which was the Christmas light guys. And they are a big part of it. You know, these are the guys who do their big Christmas shows on their houses, and, you know, they're on the home network, and everybody goes ooh and ah. But what they turned into was the Maker Faire community, which also was sort of tightly aligned with these people, but of a different color altogether. So when we were doing the forums, the Christmas light forums were one thing and the Maker Faire forums were another. And finding those forums were really useful. They weren't generating a lot of content on – sorry, that was my youngest slamming the door, thinking he was quiet. They were generating a lot of content that was not on the big three. They occasionally talked to each other about it. But the big three were not where they were generating most of their conversations. It was on these forums, these Yahoo forums, these, you know, specifically built tools forums, the audio, the AV, what is it, the AV Science Forum,
yeah,
which is a big one, and Remote Central forums, which are these sort of precursors to what social media has become, but they're still really active and really a good place to find people who are really interested in what you do. Some will hate it. We've posted some stuff about the DIY show on Remote Central. I got all kinds of flack until they realized exactly how we were going. We weren't going to give away secrets and tell people how to, you know, only make their own home theaters. We did a show on that. But they were the, there were guys who go, oh, you know what? I don't talk about this much on this forum, but I'm into that. You found your community because they're going to come from all aspects and they're going to gel in a place that you may want to build yourself or where it already exists. And sometimes those places are far flung and separate.
And George, I think that's a great point. I really think message boards help kind of fine tune a niche conversation or topic that people can find a community talking about products or services that might be relevant to their company. You know, Dawn and Matt, both from an integrator looking for manufacturers to help you with a problem, and as an integration company looking to engage with customers, do you guys go to message boards and kind of use that a little bit?
I have used them before. It's kind of hard sometimes to find really well-run and well-put-together message boards from manufacturers specifically. I've had some unusual experiences with message boards that they had them set up and it looked like they were moderated and it was crickets when you'd put in a question or something like that. But there are good ones out there. And I mean, honestly though, we talk about the big three, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, but in a lot of ways, LinkedIn and the groups on LinkedIn are almost replacing message boards rather than running their own message boards. In a lot of cases, they just start a group on LinkedIn and people can go to the LinkedIn page and ask questions. And I know I've engaged with several manufacturers that way. But I mean, they're useful. You know, it's one of those tools to keep on your bat belt, as it were, to, you know, when you need that utility, just, you know, go to the message board and get in touch with them that way. That used to be a much bigger part, you know, prior to the whole social media phenomenon. We used right. to go to message boards all the time, and that was like the gold standard. But you know, they're not as frequently run anymore.
So, Matt, is that your same experience?
For the most part, yes. One of the big ones that I do occasionally use that we've mentioned already on the show is Remote Central, and a couple of the ones like that. And I'll be honest, I'm a pretty bad community user, I guess. As in, I go in and I get the information I need and I leave as fast as I possibly can. I'm not a consistent or someone who's overly involved in them. Just because, again, most times I find them very annoying for the long process.
Right.
But again, when you need that piece of information, it can be very, very helpful. I've seen probably a larger migration of them, just as Dawn said, jumping over to LinkedIn groups. And I've found them to be a little bit more effective. The downside of most of the sites, again, as Dawn said, is they're old, slow, and clunky. And worse, they mostly look terrible, as most of you know how I feel about that kind of stuff. But yeah.
Right. And Sarah, are you involved, or do you have somebody maybe monitoring message boards for conversations that you can take part in?
That would be me. Yes, we definitely on LinkedIn, as everyone's been saying, that's really what I'm keeping my eye on for the most part. That's really where we see the most activity, and we've kind of gone back and forth with whether we wanted to start our own message board or whether it's better to kind of listen right now and see what's going on and see if there's anything relevant that we can comment on or that we can add to. So I have seen things posted about us that have been good to know about, that have been interesting, that we've been able to weigh in on. But at the same time, as a manufacturer or as a company, you don't want to go and just start spamming about, hey, look what we did. Hey, check out this cool thing. And that's what I see on some of the message boards or the LinkedIn groups that are run by manufacturers. So I think there's a very fine line, and we're still trying to figure out exactly what that is.
And it's a hallelujah, because I think that's a good takeaway though from this for a lot of people. Community building is exactly that. It's sharing and community. It's not taking it over. You may eventually want to become an influencer or a prime, you know, hub for some people to discuss, but it comes from sharing information, opening discussions, and giving props where props are due, and asking questions yourself of the community. Right. Because like you said, when they do that, one of the things that I avoid when I see any community, whether it's LinkedIn or a forum, if they're just spouting off, you're not going to really pay attention.
Oh, absolutely. And so, I mean, this kind of applies to everybody. I mean, when you're participating in conversations on, let's say, LinkedIn groups and things like that, I mean, do each of you kind of actively look for things maybe where you can answer a question for somebody that has absolutely nothing to do with your company, just to kind of qualify you as a resource for them?
We do. I know at Access, I look for that if there's something that we can help somebody with. I think that's what it's really about. It's about, you know, making somebody else's day, helping somebody else out. Social media for us is not about, we should talk to this person because hopefully they'll come and buy one of our solutions. That's really not what the goal is. So if you can help somebody, if you can share a piece of knowledge that somebody might be looking for, I don't know why anyone would pass up that opportunity.
Absolutely. That's a big thing. That's why I originally got active with my previous company and my new company on the LinkedIn questions section, is nothing but providing information and help to other people that may have questions, literally. That's why Quora, that little blip of a social network, still out there. But all it is questions that people go in and ask, technical or otherwise, and you can provide a resource. And even sometimes on Twitter, things come across where somebody puts a general question out there, and if you can provide a response, you know, it like you said, it's not about building actual customers at the moment. It's about building your own credibility. It's about building your expertise or perception of expertise. And it's about getting your company's name and face out there to people that are or will be or could be customers. And once they see you as a valued resource, that they'll come to you when they need to, you know, actually spend some money, hopefully.
Absolutely. And Matt, is that something you're a plethora of information, especially on Twitter. I mean, so you obviously take heed to that as well.
I do. I take heed to Twitter. I'm definitely most active on Twitter. The thing that I always have trouble with sites like LinkedIn and stuff like that, as far as answering questions and being involved to the extent that I'd like to be, is that unfortunately, this is not all I do. Unlike Sarah, you know, who is a full-time social media manager or whatever your exact title is, that's not my full-time job. This is something I do while running my company. So it's, you know, it's something that sometimes I can spend some time flipping through stuff or looking for stuff, or while I'm looking for something, see another topic that I can jump into and add some insight or hopefully something to. But a lot of times I just honestly don't have the time to sit there and search through stuff. Whereas on Twitter, if it's something that pops up in my feed and I'm sitting there watching it, if I can help you, I'm going to help you. If I'm obviously too busy to catch it, or I don't see it, or, you know, I caught it, but it's a day later. And again, none of this is stuff directed or sent directly to me. That stuff we see and we're much faster with. Right. But something that's just sitting in my feed, you know, there's a lot of times that I'm just unfortunately not going to see it because, again, you know, I'm not always sitting at my desk.
Well, let's say on Twitter, for example, do you set up certain search parameters maybe that are relevant to your customers? So, like, for example, I mean, would you have a certain phrase or anything like that, and maybe define some parameters that would be like in your local area? Do you really kind of focus that way?
Yeah, and that's, you know, for our residential side, that's the main part of what we do with it. You know, not only do we search and follow our local hashtag for our community, but we also have some columns set up for, excuse me, different kind of different topics or keywords that are fairly important to our business and areas that we can help, you know, speakers, receivers, surround sound, that type of stuff. And for that, that's been very, very effective. But again, you know, there are days where I don't even get TweetDeck opened. Right. And unfortunately, if you send out a bunch of questions on that day, I'm probably going to miss it just because we don't yet have someone who is, you know, even quote unquote part-time in that realm, just sitting there working that as we go.
And I mean, I think those are some excellent points. You know, on the show, we try to stress that, you know, engaging in social media isn't as daunting of a task as some people think it is, but it really does take work. I mean, it's not one of those things where you can just set it and forget it, or, you know, create your Facebook page and expect, you know, 1,000 followers overnight or something like that. You know, NC, I think you guys, you have the benefit of having multiple people on staff to kind of extend that network. But I mean, do you guys talk about, like, how can we collectively as a group, you know, work to build more awareness about Rave and, you know, the different platforms you have, and ultimately bring people back to your website? Cause I think that's ultimately what it's all about.
Yeah. And part of that is we like to let, so we all have our different positions within the company, but we all like to, in some way, shape or form, get them to express that part of what they do or their interests on online, and hopefully, have that link with what they do with the company to also go with their human image. And when they do that, then you get different aspects of what the company does. You get, you know, sometimes some of us participate in different podcasts for the AV Nation podcast, or sometimes we produce different types of content that different people in AV might be interested in. But the important thing is that we don't limit what people within the company are allowed to express. It really, the limitations are with them and what they feel comfortable doing. But when you do that, and when you let them show what they do on the inside and connect it with some of the outside people, then that content gets spread naturally, and you get to see a wide variety of that content. Molly Buckley, our director of new business development, has a social media video that she likes to do every week, and that's really one way she really likes to connect with some of the people in the industry. And we have Matt, who is our designer, who is also a big DIY person, and so he's constantly, you know, sending me articles and helping us find content that some of our other followers, some on different social media platforms, would be interested in. So you kind of get that by letting people be themselves and bring the parts that they love about this company outside to other people. And that's really what people like to see.
Well, I think that's great, because you're adding certain personalities to your brand in different ways. And it really gives people a wide array of being able to connect with you and the brand and really learn more about Rave and ultimately drive people back. You brought up, you know, you guys participate in podcasts and things like that. And I'll kind of open this up to everybody for discussion. I mean, how often do you guys participate in, I know we talked about LinkedIn groups and things like that, but, you know, things like organized Twitter chats, which for people listening don't quite understand what that is. You know, oftentimes an organization or group of people with similar interests will have an organized chat on Twitter that's at a designated time on a designated day, and as many people they can will join in. I think there's one once a month on, it's called AV Chat. It's #AV Chat. I mean, how often do you guys look for things like that, whether it be about AV industry or whether it be about your local community or things like that? I mean, have you found those kind of resources beneficial?
Yeah, actually all the time, especially when the AV chats are relevant and when they're on you know, a time when they're within a time zone that, you know, works with our schedule. But we're always looking for whether they're webinars or different seminars that we can participate in. To really see what people are talking about and to really talk to people and get to know them. So even if they're smaller webinars that maybe don't get publicized as heavily, if we come across them, then we're definitely there. And we really like that. That's a really great way to get to know people in the industry that, you know, aren't in the big three necessarily, but still are getting information from these other areas when those opportunities arise.
Yeah, I agree. They're fantastic resources. AV Chat is a great one for people in our field, and some of the local community chats and chats that are sponsored by the various tech councils and things. They're incredibly useful just for building our standing in the community, but also finding out what people need out there, finding out what what needs that we can provide for them. That's ultimately where any business is successful, because, you know, we're not out there. We all want to make money, but at the end of the day, we want to be able to provide a need for somebody. We want to give them a solution, and you can't give them solutions if you don't know what their problems are. Those sorts of chats and groups are fantastic for that. So getting involved with those is, I would say, vital, particularly for a small integrator. If you're not participating, you're losing out.
And Sarah, one of the amazing things I find about, especially like a brand that's on social media, is that most time you know a brand by its logo or something like that. An event like a tweet up, which for people listening, that's when you would actually meet in real life, heaven forbid, people in at a local bar or something like that. And you kind of learn. You get a chance to meet all the people that you interact with on social media. I mean, do you guys participate in that at all?
We've gone to some tweet ups. I do the AV chat whenever I can actually make it. And I actually do that from my personal account, not from the Access Networks account. And because this industry is so small, I think that there is a little bit of room to kind of merge personal and brand. So we do it a little bit, but, it's not something that I've been very, very active in, but I found it really useful when I have been involved, just to see what people are saying and to hear what people in the industry have to say about relevant topics, because, you know, you want to know what your clients need, and you want to kind of know what's going on and keep up with the new trends. So I wouldn't say it's our first priority, but it's a great thing to do.
Well, I think what the benefit of those things are is that it validates that there is a person behind the accounts. It's not, I mean, with most of social media resources such as TweetDeck or Hootsuite or whatever you want to use, you can set up automated posts and it's an automatic feed and things like that. And while it may look like somebody's actively participating, until you really start to see them respond in real time to questions and answers, I mean, you don't really know who that person is or who's the person behind the avatar, so to speak. I think having the opportunity to, add that personal touch to your brand is absolutely invaluable. Getting into some of those resources to do all these things. Again, I spoke about how, we like to say that, it's not the most challenging thing you'll ever do is building these communities and these networks. It does take time. And, there are some resources out there that'll certainly help you. What are some of your guys' favorite tools for managing your community, whether it be, notifying you of alerts or things like that? And Sarah, I'll start with you. Do you have certain tools that you go to time and again?
Yes, I am an avid Hootsuite user. I absolutely love Hootsuite. It's really helped me organize different hashtags for the community and all of the various Twitter accounts that I am managing. And I think that that's been the most useful tool. And then also email updates all the time from LinkedIn for all of the different groups that I'm watching and all of that. I think those are my two. If I had to pull two tools out of my back pocket that I could not live without, those would be it.
And Dawn, I mean, do you have certain tools you use?
Well, I'm a TweetDeck girl myself. TweetDeck lets me organize, like she said, the hashtags, various searches if I'm looking for something specific. And it helps me kind of keep organized. And it's just a great little run in the background while I'm sitting at my desk working on real stuff, quote unquote, right, during the day. It gives me alerts. That's specifically for Twitter. It's all in how you customize things. I have my LinkedIn account set up that when somebody comments to specific groups that I belong to, I'll get an alert sent right to my email, which of course comes to my phone then. So, I'm always on top of what the topics are, what the conversations are. There's lots of ways to do it. It's just whatever works best for you. And at the moment, those work best for me.
And Matt, I know between, a desktop application as well as phone, you're pretty successful at doing both. I mean, what are your go-to resources?
I use a lot of TweetDeck. I'm a big TweetDeck user. I still haven't upgraded since you last mentioned it to me on the new one. I'm still rocking old school, like 0.381 or something on my Mac. And it's a workhorse. It ain't dead yet. But I use, as I said, TweetDeck a lot on my computer. For mobile, I use a variety of both TweetDeck, Hootsuite, and the just base Twitter application by itself. And then one thing I also use, which isn't necessarily a strict social media piece, but I use a lot of Google Alerts to get information back over to me and directly to my phone to keep me just abreast of what's going on, both in our industry and just in general.
It's kind of interesting that you say that. I use Google Alerts and also Google Reader just to keep track of things that people are actually producing in the industry, like constantly being updated with information that I can glance. And on the other side of that, within social media, I love hashtags because it's so interesting that on a you know, entity as big as Twitter, that people have carved out so many different niches, you know, within that area. And so sometimes when I'm following the general AV Tweeps hashtag, I find that people are also maybe talking about some other aspect of AV, like EdTech or Green AV, or maybe there's a chat going on within those. And so I actually have generated quite an impressive list of different hashtags that people use at different times. And throughout the day, I can just say, oh, well, I wonder what this group of people are talking about, or that group of people. And there's a lot of overlap, but interestingly enough, there's also a lot of just really unique conversation, really unique content that you wouldn't otherwise get, because you have to consider the fact that there is a geography, there are maps within Twitter, that just because it's a digital medium doesn't mean, you know, people haven't carved out their spaces in. So those are my actual go-to tools.
And I think you brought up an interesting point there with the hashtags. I know we find a lot of success in not necessarily hijacking a hashtag, so to speak. And for everybody listening, a hashtag is on Twitter, it's a pound symbol and then a specific phrase that helps group a conversation together. But if there's something relevant to maybe something that you can provide commentary on or help kind of further a conversation, you know, include that hashtag, but don't be like some people we know and include 15 hashtags in every post, because that really defeats the purpose. I think it's one of those things where, you know, if you see a relevant topic, and it really helps, I think, with current topics or something that's hot, it kind of gets you involved in the conversation. You know, one thing I'd like to kind of touch on before we wrap up the show is the idea of becoming more of a subject matter expert, you know, helping to promote, you know, unique ideas and unique thoughts versus just being somebody else on the Twitter conversation. Maybe Sarah, maybe you guys can speak about that. I know with you guys, you have to bring up a lot of awareness about actually what your service is and what products you guys offer, and help drive awareness of the category. I mean, is that something you guys, you know, really proactively push?
Well, yes. I think what I've learned throughout the last year that I've been doing this for Access Networks is that establishing yourself as a leader in the space and as the person who has the knowledge first, or if not first, you know, has a very interesting take on the knowledge or has something to share that everybody hasn't already heard, is very valuable. But if nobody's listening, it's ultimately you're not doing your job. So I think that engaging with the community so that people actually want to listen to you is more important than becoming a thought leader at first. And I think you need to engage first and listen to what people are saying and really kind of let people know who you are and why they should listen to you, because otherwise they're just not going to. So I think it's a two-step process, but for a manufacturer or, you know, for anybody really, I think ultimately you want to establish yourself as that person or that company or that group that people will go to when they need to answer a question, or when they want the latest news, or when they want to know something that's relevant to what you do.
Right. And speaking of, you know, having your audience listen to you, I mean, how do you determine how to actually, I mean, this is something I think we overlook is how do you determine actually how to speak to your audience? I mean, it can't just all be technical jargon all the time. It really has to be, especially with a platform like Twitter, it almost has to be quote unquote dumbed down to fit in there. I mean, is that a challenge for you guys or do you really have to kind of work at that?
I think it's really challenging, especially when you're representing a brand, because then you have that whole, do we talk as a we or do we talk as an I? And one of my pet peeves is when a brand switches between we and I, because whenever somebody who's representing a brand says I in a tweet or my favorite, I'm thinking, who are you? You know, I don't know who you are. Are you the CEO? Are you the assistant? Are you the social media manager? Who are you? And so I think trying to have a personality and then also to represent a brand or a company can definitely be a challenge. And it takes some time to figure out if you're going to answer something like I did today for the Access Networks Twitter account. I said, oh, CEDIA has beer. That's so great. You know, I've decided most of us here would love to go drink a beer at CEDIA. So that's relevant. And you can say that, but I think it's. Well,
that's knowing your audience there. You get an A+.
Absolutely. You know, you have to know your audience and you have to know your company. Right. So it's really both of those things.
And kind of following up on Sarah's comments there, Matt, I mean, how important is that element of transparency for you? I mean, do you like to know who's the face behind the avatar? Or does that even matter to you?
It only matters to me if we're in a in-depth conversation. If it's something, you know, just a piece of newsworthy information or something like that, then no, it really doesn't matter to me. But if we're, you know, sitting there having an actual conversation about something, it's really nice at the very least if, you know, the personnel who's running it puts their initials at the end of the tweet, just so that, you know, who you're talking to, or if you know multiple people at that company, you know that you're talking to, you know, for example, Terry from Draper, you know, you're on, or you're tweeting with him. The time it gets annoying is when, and I have this with my local cell phone provider all the time, I'll submit a customer service question to them about something, and I'll get just a random response back. And then, you know, it either will solve something or won't solve something, and there's no accountability because I don't know who I'm talking to, and I don't know who gave me that information. So, like, I know for us, our company Twitter account has just the logo avatar, and you got to read the description to know it's from me, but I'm the only one who runs our account. So it really doesn't matter as much unless you're new to us. But again, it doesn't often seem to be an issue.
Right. I think you and Sarah are almost in the same boat. And I mean, I do this too, because quite frankly, I'm very associated with my job. I mean, naturally, social media is going to blend professional and your personal lives. You know, Dawn is, I know, as being AV Dawn and then also having companies. I mean, is that something you probably have the biggest personality on Twitter? Is that something that you struggle with, or is it even something that you're cognizant of?
Well, with my original company, when I started all this social stuff, AV Dawn was the only Twitter account, and I sort of tweeted everything from it personally and, you know, business-wise. But with my new company, the company has a Twitter account, and I do. And it does say right on the profile that, you know, all tweets tweeted by AV Dawn. But I feel kind of schizo because I don't always feel appropriate giving my own opinion as the company opinion. So when I, for instance, participate in AV chat with TweetDeck, it lets you have multiple accounts open at once. And then when you type a tweet, you can have it send from one or the other or both. Right. And so there are times I'm switching back, I'm responding like two or three times to each question because I'm responding as AV Dawn and I'm responding as NetAV and then I'm responding as both. Or so, you know, it can get kind of complicated, put it that way. But I mean, it's not terrible. You know, there are tools to help you manage it. And even when I tweet as NetAV, I do try to have personality because nobody wants to talk to a robot. And yeah, that's, you know, when you're out, if you start outsourcing social media or coming up with algorithms to auto respond to things, you don't want people thinking that's you because people catch on to that and they hate that.
Right.
So, you know, I try to I appreciate the biggest personality thing, but I do try to have personality and try to be like a real person. And I hope when everyone meets me in person at like Infocom and so forth, that they're like, oh yeah, you're AV Dawn. That totally makes sense, you know, but, and that's the goal. We're all people, you know?
Yeah.
It's
and I know from like, whenever I'm differentiating between our agency's account, which is really, I mean, you know, we go back and forth with people on our agency account, but for the most part, it's stuff that's going to help people with PR, marketing, and for the most part, helping to promote our clients as well, because that is our business. But if I kind of retweet something from one of my clients' accounts or share something on Facebook from one of my clients' account, I'm always, you know, adamant about I'm going to, most of the time, like on Twitter, I'll put CL in parentheses or something like that, just to kind of tell people, hey, this is client news. You know, it's not me just proactively endorsing something. It's kind of just be aware that I'm doing this because it is a client, not because I feel obligated to share it because it's a client. I obviously believe in it, but I want people to know that, hey, there's a reason why you're getting a random thing about chocolates, if that's one of our clients or something like that, in my feed or whatever. You know, NC, you know, is that something you guys are because you have such personalities tied into being members of the press? I mean, that's who you are. You know, is that something you guys are really, really aware of? Is that how that could be a reflection of Prom Wave Rave?
Yeah. Yes, actually, you all, excuse me, you all actually touched on that point exactly. The philosophy of talking as your company and as yourself, and that balancing act is you do that, and you didn't say it in very specific terms, but I'm going to go ahead and throw that out there because it's a lot of what we do. You do that by formatting your messages differently depending on who and where the message is supposed to come from. So when we tweet out news stories, for instance, at Rave, you'll see that we have, or we try to uphold, very journalistic AP style standards with headlines that, you know, they're still opinionated, but you know that's a news story. Whereas when we talk to people or respond to people that tweet at us or retweet us or talk to us in whatever forms, it's really a lot more informal. You'll see a lot of eyes. You'll see more informal language. Dare I even say some bad grammar from time to time. Where, you know, not as hard on yourself if there's a typo or a lull or a squee that we throw in there, or a double awesome or something like that. But the key is that we make that distinction so that people can see, hey, this is news, this is what they do, and hey, this is them interacting with people based on how people have responded to them. And I think that's a lot of what you all do. And I think it's a really important thing to keep in mind when you're building a community, that it's okay to have a more professional message and have also within those informal messages that you use to actually talk to people. And I think they can be helpful. They don't have to be mutually exclusive.
Absolutely. Just don't do what, there's one person I follow on Twitter who it's transparent that she tweets for her company, and then she also has her personal account, which are kind of linked in between each other. And then in her personal account, she's always bashing her company. And I'm like, I want to tell her, like you realize people can see the connection there or whatever, but apparently her bosses can't. So don't do that if you're listening.
Yeah.
Her bosses can't her next bosses.
Exactly. So, well, I think we've hit on some great topics on how to first build a community. What is your community? How to identify it, how to actually participate in it, and how to help manage it. Kind of want to kick it to each one of you for like one lasting tip for each one of our listeners. You know, one thing you would recommend to do, to not do, or anything that might help them. Sarah, we'll start with you.
I think to stay on topic, my one tip for building community is to always keep looking for where that next community might be, or where a new hashtag is popping up or a new group. I think it's very easy to find a couple places where you see your business being relevant and then kind of forgetting to just look around and see if there's new things popping up or new places where you might want to visit or be relevant. And I think that's the best way to keep your social media interesting and to keep your topics interesting and to keep finding new clients and new customers and new people to interact with. So always keep searching for new opportunities.
Great tip. And Dawn, do you have a lasting impression?
The biggest thing, especially if you're new to social media, but even if you're not new, when you're building a community or joining a community, remember, you've got two ears and one mouth. So listen twice as hard as you talk, and don't just come in there full guns blazing, sell, sell, sell. You want to listen. You want to hear what people are saying, what they need, and then respond accordingly. And that will build your reputation as a good social media person, as well as your reputation as an expert on whatever topic you're trying to deal with.
Awesome. And Matt?
I would say be friendly, as really the one of the number one keys is when you're building a community, nobody wants to be friends with the bully. So whether that means, you know, spamming or whether that means whatever, just be friendly, be engaged, and be nice. It's the Canadian in me. I got to say it.
I think that applies to all elements of life.
Well, it does, but it's very, you know, so many people think that when they get online that it's, you know, essentially so many people will say so many things online that they would never, ever say to somebody's face.
Oh, absolutely.
And we always seem to forget that very, very quickly. So it's something, especially if you're doing it from a company account or anything business related, it's not the time to call someone out and yell at them for whatever atrocity you think they did. That's not the place.
Good point. Good point. And NC, last but definitely not least.
Okay. I would say don't be afraid to reach out to the members of the community that you do have, and don't be afraid to ask them how they communicate and where they communicate. And most importantly, don't be afraid to see if there's a way that they can introduce you to other people that might be interested. And how you do that is obviously up to, you know, sort of the products or services that you offer. But do it in a friendly way, and don't be afraid to leverage the networks that you have.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I think that about wraps up this episode. I want to thank each of my panelists. That's Dawn Mead. You can find Dawn on Twitter at AVDawn. Thank you, Dawn. We also had Matt Scott from Omega Audio Video. You can find Matt on Twitter at Matt D. Scott. We had NC Nwako from Rave, and NC's at NC underscore NWOKO. And our special guest was Sarah Fleischman of Access Networks. And you can find Sarah on Twitter at Sarah, SARAHFLEE. So, and I'm Scott Moody. I think George Tucker had to step away for just a moment, but we thank you all for listening.